Good morning. I call the meeting to order. The date is April 8, 2011. The time is approximately 8:05 a.m. In attendance today are Co-Chair Meyer, Vice Chair Senator Davis, Senator French, and myself, Co-Chair Thomas. And we do expect Senator Stevens to be a little late. We also do have a quorum to conduct business. This is a meeting of the Senate Education Committee for this, the first session of the 27th Alaska Legislature. And again, good morning to everyone. We have a very busy schedule today and little time to do it in, so first we're going to continue with SB 107, an act making special appropriations for the new engineering buildings for the University of Alaska in both Anchorage and Fairbanks, which we heard testimony for on Wednesday. Then we're going to return to SB 6, an act relating to providing a pre-kindergarten program with the school district, to hear and adopt the CS and to discuss how to handle that during the interim. And finally, we're going to hear a presentation on the Fisher Report, an independent review of the University of Alaska. We will start with SB 107. We left public testimony open last Wednesday, but have not heard from anybody else willing or wishing to speak to the bill. So unless there's somebody here today with a burning desire to do that, we will close public testimony. And with that, we have staff from Senator Ellis's office here this morning. If there's anything else you want to contribute to the discussion, please come forward and put yourself on the record. Nothing new, nothing earth-shattering? Okay, all right, very good. Well, do we have any questions that people might want to ask of Senator Ellis's staff? I didn't think so, but and we have no one online. Okay. In that case, regarding SB 107, which is here amongst my paperwork, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, question?
Senator Meyer.
The intent, obviously, is to, in order to get this bill funded, it has to go to finance. So would you like to go ahead and move it to finance? Or?
I would. That's, okay. That's correct.
That I'll make that motion then.
My hope this morning.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill 107 from committee with individual recommendations, and there is no fiscal note since this is an appropriation bill.
Correct.
Okay.
Is there objection? Let's see. Without objection, the motion passes, and SB 107 moves to the next committee of referral. We'll just take a brief at ease, sign that paperwork if we have that. Okay. All right. We'll do that later then. Let's see. Now we take up Senate Bill 6. I believe there is a committee substitute for the bill. Is there a motion to adopt the CS for SB 6? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt for the purposes of discussion the committee substitute for Senate Bill 6, version I. I is an I.
Is there objection? Hearing none, I understand there's staff here from Senator Davis in French's office. I believe we'll have Ms. Hobbs and Mr. Obermeyer are going to walk us through it. If they'd please come forward, put themselves on the record, and walk us through the CS.
Good morning. Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis.
Lila Hobbs, aide to Senator French.
You have before you the most recent I version of the Senate Bill 6. It's 27LS0058/I as an indigo. This particular version changes the age for the school for the student enrolled in a public pre-kindergarten program from 4 and 5 years of age to 4 years of age. This version also expressly provides for the inclusion of the pre-kindergarten students in the student count without providing for an exception for the first year of the program to allow for an estimated count, and changes the inclusion from part-time student to not more than a half-time student. And that, of course, will affect the fiscal note, which I don't know if the department is prepared to deal with that this morning. Would you like me to read the sponsor statement?
No.
No.
Excuse me.
No, you're the sponsor, so it's your right.
The sponsor statement has already been read. I think we probably have some remarks that we're going to talk about on that. But what I want you to do today is to go through the changes that's been made, identify where they are, what different this version does to the original one. And then, also we need to speak to the physical note because that is one that needs to be redone. Were you able to get anything back from that? You do have it?
You have them here to testify.
Oh, they're here to testify. Okay. Thank you.
So if you could do just as your boss indicated, just kind of indicate those changes, and that'll get us up to speed as well, and then we'll have the department comment on the fiscal note.
Well, Section 1 on page 1 of the bill, subsection A, describes a pre-kindergarten program for 4 years of age. And we had previously said 4- and 5-year-olds, but, of course, 5-year-olds may be enrolled in a regular kindergarten program. And also, on page 2, we've taken out an exception under subsection B, section 3, which included an exception for an estimated count that apparently the department said they cannot fund an estimated count. So it's my understanding in this change, we are allowing the department to make their regular count in October, and it will essentially set the dollar amount for those students enrolled that year already, beginning in August, September, for that school year, so that we don't miss an entire year of funding for the pre-K program. Those are the two most significant changes, and we also indicated, and this is most important for the fiscal note, that under subsection B, again, this is lines 13 through 16 on section 3, page 2, that a student who's enrolled and provided in a pre-kindergarten program provided by a district shall be counted as not more than half-time. We did have part-time, and that was considered less than accurate because there are several types of part-time students. There are less than half-time, half-time, and three-quarter students, so we wanted to specify it was less than half-time or not more than half-time. And again, that I'm sure the department can address that when they come up with the revised fiscal note. So those are the main changes that we've made in this version of the bill. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Are there questions of Mr. Obermeyer? Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarity's purposes, the previous fiscal note was based on a cohort of 4- and 5-year-olds going half-time, just as we currently do in a pre-kindergarten class, just as we currently do in a kindergarten class. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator French, it was my understanding, and that, again, we should refer to the department, that they took the current number of 5-year-olds that are in kindergarten now and assumed that all 4-year-olds would be moving into that age group in the next year. So they took that as the basis and then assumed that they would be included in the ADM at a full-time basis, which greatly inflated the fiscal note. So I haven't heard from the department yet because we have to have adopted this version before they can speak to the fiscal note. But I understand it may cut the fiscal note in half if this is recognized as a part-time kindergarten program.
Well, I'll follow up with them. Thank you. But just for the purposes of this committee understanding what the bill does is the number of hours per day that the kids would spend in pre-kindergarten is about a half a day. Is that right?
Through the chair, that is what is anticipated. This would be a part-time program. And also, I don't know if the department will address it, but it's not anticipated that every school district will have this. This is an optional program, and it's also optional for parents. So we don't really know the exact number, but they're trying to come up with a base number, and I think they can speak to that.
Right, but just as to the question I asked, and the question was about whether the amount of time spent per day in school would be about half time, the answer is yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Other questions of either Mr. Obermeyer or Ms. Hobbs? Hearing none, thank you. We'll have the department come forward and see if they can shed a little more light on the fiscal note. Ms. Noodleman, please put yourself on the record and your affiliation and see if you can answer the question that has arisen.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Elizabeth Noodleman, Director of School Finance for the Department of Education. So the department has drafted a fiscal note for the CSSB 06, and in drafting the new fiscal note, the department used the kindergarten cohort as the total number of students that we believed would be eligible for this new program as pre-kindergarten, and then we applied a one-half full-time equivalent to that. And so in doing that, it simply is one half of the previous fiscal note, because the previous fiscal note, we had calculated that at the eligibility of one full-time FTE. So the new fiscal note, we anticipate, as our draft is at $41,826,000.
And anything else you care to add to that? Any other?
We did also acknowledge the changes that the sponsor's staff spoke of. The note does change the 4- and 5-year-old reference to 4 years old. That really doesn't change our calculation here in the fiscal note, because again, we are looking at one cohort. In changing and removing the funding from an estimate to an actual October count, the department's feedback on that is simply that this program does fund on actuals, and I don't know exactly how close an estimate would be, and so our recommendation was to fund this through an actual account as we would the rest of the foundation students. And again, as in our last fiscal note, we have not addressed the facilities issue. That likely would be something that would stream out over the years, and so I wouldn't anticipate anything large in an initial year fiscal note, if anything at all.
Okay.
I can answer any questions.
Okay, very good. Are there any other questions? Senator French.
Just a couple, just to remind me. The foundation formula currently pays the same for kids, whether they're in kindergarten or 12th grade. Is that right?
Through the chair, that's correct.
And have you done any research into whether that's actually what it costs? That is, do we are the costs exactly the same, or is that just the way we divide out the amount of money we spend?
Through the chair, I would probably agree with the last half of that sentence. That's how we divide out the amount of money that we spend. We haven't specifically studied the differences there.
And that's really the reason I asked. I did some reading about this, about the benefits of funding pre-kindergarten through the school funding formula, and then really more importantly, sort of figuring out what it's actually going to cost to do this. And the reason I raise it is because, you know, as much as I'd like to keep this fiscal note as small as possible, you always sort of believe a small fiscal note makes your bill more alive. By the same token, you don't want to just establish a program that doesn't work very well. And, you know, it's going to have to be quality pre-kindergarten in order to get the benefits. And it may be that it actually costs more than what it costs to teach, say, a 9th grader or a 10th grader. And so I guess I would ask you to do some looking into that over the summer as this bill continues to be worked on.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Davis.
Well, the programs that we could look at, and it's funded that way that she just described there, is the kindergarten program. And, you know, there might be other things that have to happen at the higher level more so than it is at the lower one. I think there's adequate funding for that. And it's 4 hours or less. You know, those programs are run about 3 to 4 hours, 4.5 hours, no more than that. But the kindergarten is a good model to say that formula is working. And that fiscal note was highly inflated because we had four-year-old and five-year-olds hooked into it, and then they said the cohort they use that from the kindergarten, pre-K. That has been redone. All you did was just cut it in half, right?
Correct.
41 million is what you said?
Correct.
Okay. I appreciate the fact that you have done that. I know there's a lot of other work that need to be done. You know, I know you can't give me the answers. You're doing the financial part, and I appreciate that. But I am disappointed that we are not having any input from the department saying, yo, this bill is an okay bill. We can stand behind this bill, or we recommend these changes. There, I haven't heard not one word from the department, except for the physical that you provided. And I don't know if anybody ever planned to do that, but you would think something this important, because we do need to have full time, all over the state, kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, just like we have kindergarten. We need pre-K. And who's to do it? We are. We're responsible for providing education to our children, and we are the ones that need to come up with a program that will work. This doesn't do anything but just say by a certain date we're going to have pre-kindergarten, and then those schools that can put those kids in programs right away and want to do it, they will be able to do that. They wouldn't be forced to do it, but they will be ready to do it, and a lot of them want it. And I know that maybe over the last few days, or since we met the last time, maybe you got some of the calls of people saying that, yeah, they support this. I have received many letters saying that they do. I don't care about it staying here in this committee, because this bill is still good next year. But I'm going to do whatever I can to get the message out that there is a bill that we are looking at, and do you want to give it input? We're going to take that, and when we come back in January, hopefully we'll be able to look at this bill and move it forward, because it's significant. I don't care what kind of volunteer program we have. I don't care what kind of pilot program that we have. It does not meet the need of our students. And the only way it's going to be done is to put something in statute so that it can be done. So thank you for coming and giving your input. But the message I want to send back is someone needs to speak to this other than the financial part of it.
And you have that message, and I understand it's very difficult for the department to take a position when the governor has not made his position clear on it. So we
And I don't buy that.
Well, that unfortunately is the status of things. We find that in all these committees recently. So anyhow, with that, anything else you have to add, or are there any other questions of Ms. Needleman?
Thank
if
you.
There aren't any, thank you for your explanation of the fiscal note and how we got to that point. We have talked about what we will be doing going forward at this point and what we plan to do. We've had some discussions with the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council, and they actually testified here, and we look forward to receiving a notification of their agenda for this summer, the interim period of time, and their meeting dates. And we also are going to schedule with them a couple of meetings later in the fall so we can hopefully move forward on getting a more structured plan put together so that when we get to the next session, we'll have something before us to move forward with seriously. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure the audience and anybody who may be watching knows that we did write a letter to this council asking that they make some formal presentations to us throughout the interim on pre-K and what they're doing in that area. And hopefully they will be looking at this bill, Senate Bill 6, and I think that's something that we will want to remind them of as we meet with them over the interim. It does appear like there are a lot of good things going on in the pre-K area. But I think that's part of the problem. There doesn't seem to be a central coordinating effort to advise us how to efficiently provide this. And I think Senator Davis's bill goes a long ways to doing that. So I appreciate Senator Davis bringing this forward and look forward to continuing working on it over the interim.
Very good. That's exactly what we've done. We have written them, and we expect to hear back from them when they get their meeting schedule formulated. So very good. If there's nothing else, we'll hold the bill in committee at this point in time and bring up our next subject, which is the request that Senator Stevens had to hear some feedback from the university on the Fisher Report. And we have with us today Wendy Redmond, who is going to give us a presentation on the Fisher Report, and I believe everybody has a copy of that before them. Ms. Redmond, if you'd come up, put yourself on the record and your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. My name is Wendy Redmond. I'm the Executive Vice President for the University of Alaska System. And I believe I tried to present some materials that would make it easier to try to understand the Fisher Report. It's quite voluminous and goes into a lot of different directions. I think the easiest way to follow it is with the there was a PowerPoint that I passed out. And I think that's the easiest way, I think, for us to go through it. The first page is outlining the purposes of this report. And President Gamble, with the support of the Rasmussen Foundation, went out and asked for this consultant to come in to do a broad review of the system, to assist the president and the Board of Regents in assessing the overall condition of the university, to advise us on the attitudes of the university and the system constituencies, to candidly identify and address issues and opportunities affecting the UA system, and to recommend a tentative agenda for the future which could be used in our strategic planning. And it happens that the new president, President Gamble, came in at a time when our strategic plan had just ended. So he's in a process of starting a whole new strategic planning process, and he really wanted to have some new eyes on the issues that were facing us. So Dr. Fisher and his group, he had five additional people who came up here with him. It was a whirlwind tour, but that's how he does all of these things. He was here for 6 days, he and his group, in and out. They met with several hundred people during the time they were here. There are lots of opinions about how effective the resulting report was. I think there are things in here that make everybody happy, and there are things in here that make every constituency unhappy. So I guess that's probably a good thing. I tried to sort through the recommendations in a way that would make some sense. Dr. Fisher identified what he considered to be five of the most significant challenges facing the university system over the course of the next year. So that's on the next page. And the first significant challenge he identified was how much should the UAA campus be developed in size and programs, and to what extent should this occur at the expense of UAF? And that seems, you know, very specific sort of to start off with, but in fact it impacts many, many other issues at the university right now that we need to get a handle on. And one of the, you know, clearly UAA, this is an issue, by the way, that is facing many, many states, where the land-grant research mission, a land-grant research university started in a smaller community, usually as an agricultural college, was built up from there, and then the large urban institution would develop in another city, and then they'd begin fighting. We're trying to avoid that. There is clearly some tensions that exist, but we're trying to manage aspirations at this point. And I think when Dr. Fisher was here, that's one of the things that he ran into with every constituency that he met with, was the need for us to work with the campuses very carefully to clarify what their missions are and to have the Board of Regents really be able to distinctly identify different institutional goals so that we didn't constantly have this overlap and this tension between the campuses. That clearly is easier said than done, but we're working on that right now. I think the president feels very comfortable that he has chancellors in place and has executives and faculty in place who are willing to work on these issues hard. So we're diving into the mission clarification issue. One of the things that we have, of course, is that you want your campus to be aspirational. It's just trying to figure out how much is too much, and so it's a balance. Some of the things that we looked at under this, some of the specific recommendations that sort of fell under this category also included a program specialization, particularly at the graduate level, because that's where programs get very expensive because of the small class size. So we wanted to make sure we were taking a look at those. He very definitely recommended that we go in and look at all graduate programs for size, because there are some that he identified for back in the detail of the report that we may want to consider either eliminating altogether or combining with some other programs. He certainly fell into the same area when we talked about UAA research focus on social behavioral education. That's where we're going. UAF research on science and engineering. That does not mean that we do not have engineering in Anchorage and that we don't have robust engineering in Anchorage. There are many, many programs that are appropriately duplicated in different sites, and there are programs that are not appropriately duplicated. So that's what we're looking at right now. Engineering is one that we feel is very appropriately duplicated in some areas. We're trying to hold down the graduate, trying to sort out the graduate level programs, but at the undergraduate level, we have a huge need in both campuses, so they're going forward. Looking at program collaborations is something that Fisher talks about a lot, and we continue to do that where we have lead campuses like we have done for nursing. There's a huge need in the state for nursing, but we didn't want the Fairbanks campus, for instance, to begin their own nursing program. The accreditation requirements for nursing are very high and very specific, and we felt that it would be best if we let one campus take the lead and they could offer the program in communities around the state. So UAA is now delivering nursing in 14 communities in Alaska, and that's a model that's worked very effectively for us. So we're continuing to sort of hold the line on those kinds of starting new programs when there's a campus that already has great expertise in it. Enhanced e-learning and distance education, of course, we can't get away from that. The students are demanding it. The only thing holding us back on that right now is actual broadband capacity. So as that comes online, the students are pushing us in that direction. The next significant challenge, and you can stop me, please, if you have any questions, as I was told to talk fast.
Okay.
The next significant challenge was, how can the university further improve its performance in critical areas such as student retention, graduation, and externally recognized academic quality? This is where the Fisher Report really overlapped a lot with the higher education committee that Senator Stevens and Representative Chenault, who co-chaired, and they spent a lot of time in that final report talking about these same issues. These are really the issues that President Gamble has identified as the ones that are the most important for him at this point. And it's also, of course, becoming more and more important nationally. Part of it is the movement from the K-12 system, where there's a lot of focus put on K-12 systems to measure the outcomes of those schools. And that focus is now coming back to the universities to say, listen, you know, what are you guys doing? How much value added is there to a student after they've been to the university than there was when they came in the front door? Many of our majors we do measure. If they're in a professional program like nursing or engineering or teacher, they take tests when they come out, and we have a pretty good idea. But general education students, liberal arts students, we don't have any idea. So that's one of the things that the president is very keen on looking at. Our retention and graduation rates in Alaska are the lowest in the nation. And there are lots of reasons for that. One of the major reasons is the way we have organized our system so that we have community colleges and universities that are combined. And we don't separate them out. We're the only state that does that. So if you tease our campuses apart and you look at the universities compared to their peers and you look at the community colleges compared to their peers, we look about average, which isn't very good, frankly, in this country right now in terms of student retention and graduation. So we're taking a look, and one of the recommendations that Fisher talks about in here is really how to count, because it does make a difference when those are national data points that are out there, and he thinks it makes a difference in terms of recruitment and how you advertise yourself and so on. If you're always showing up as, in the bottom of the bucket. And part of the difference is not that the students who are going to the community college are not as motivated, it's just that their mission is different. Their goal is not to graduate and get a degree. So we need to take the students who really are not there for that particular outcome out of the mix. And we found the one research study that we did a few years ago when we tracked students down who had left UAA to find out why they left, the overwhelming answer was we got what we came for. So it was just a skill upgrade. It may have been, a raise because they've got a few more credits. It wasn't a degree or a certificate. So we're kind of dealing with that issue internally, trying to figure out how we can identify ourselves. One of the things that they found again at UAA is the national data is based on 5-year graduation rates. And if you take UAA students and we look at a 10-year graduation rate, all of a sudden we're right at the national norm for baccalaureate students. But, I don't know we're not sure exactly what that means yet, except that Alaskan students just take a lot longer. I think it will correlate heavily with our high employment rate in Alaska, so that when people are working, they're not in school. As soon as the unemployment goes up, our enrollments go up. So people are tending to go to school. Over 80% of our students in Anchorage are going to school part-time. And that just takes, you just drag it out a lot longer.
Olivia, if I could, so mm-hmm. I don't want to misunderstand this situation. Are you saying that anyone that actually takes a class at the university could be considered a dropout simply because they don't complete an education? Is that...
On the national data, they have to say that they're there to get a specific degree. But, of course, they all say that, right, coming in the front door. So if a student says, I'm here to get a baccalaureate degree in nursing, even though they have not yet been accepted to the nursing program or anything else, they get counted in the data of completion or lack of completion.
But the individual that just takes a class at the community college or something like that is not somebody that somehow gets mixed into the entire enrollment and then considered
failure?
A failure, so to speak, a lack of graduation?
Not right now, no. We are pulling them out.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
On the national level, there are now three different groups that are working on this, two governor's groups and one that came out of Obama's thing, working on the issue of completion for college students. So it's going to be, one is called Compete to Complete, and there's a couple of other ones. There's going to be a lot of focus on this over the course of the next couple of years. So you'll hear a lot coming out of the university, too, in terms of what does it take us to, really put the services in place. What are the barriers that we have within the university system to successful completion? We can't just point our finger at the schools and say they came to us unprepared. That doesn't work anymore, and we need to work carefully with the schools and are working with the schools to figure out in what areas do we need to help enhance a student's ability to be successful at college. We know there are some things that we know work very effectively, the summer academies and pre-college experiences. So we've had, in the last 3 years, we've had these as very high priorities in our budget requests to have these K-12 summer institutes in our, because we know they work. There are other things, things like I was talking to Senator Davis the other day. We know that participation with Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, youth groups, those are high predictors of success at college. So we're working on a sort of a multitude of fronts trying to figure out what we can do. We're also working inside the institution to make sure that we've got the barriers down that, that have cropped up internal to the university system, things like transferability to make sure that that's easy, high-quality advising. One of the issues came up with the HERT committee about mandatory advising because, of course, students who get advisors do better than students who don't. But because so many of our students are adults, the average age is over 30, they tend to not follow direction as well as those incoming freshmen. So we can make mandatory advising for the Alaska Scholars, for instance, and hopefully for the new scholars that will be coming in with the Governor's Program. We know that their success will be greatly enhanced if we require them to get an advisor.
Just a question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator French.
It's a little bit off the topic, but it's sort of in the general area of the institution and recruitment. What do we do to sort of advertise UA's qualities to students around the nation? Does the average, I think a lot of people want to come to Alaska. I think it's something that's always sort of out there in the world. And I just wonder what we do to capitalize on that with respect to students who are, seniors in high school, making a choice about a university to go to. How do we put the University of Alaska in their minds?
Well, the marketing is very expensive, so we haven't been able to do a lot of it in the last couple of years, but we found some pretty effective marketing tools. For instance, UAS uses targeted marketing in outdoor magazines.
Right.
Because those are the kind of students that are most effective here. So the campuses, Anchorage and Fairbanks, did a joint recruiting trip this year down to Washington, Oregon, and California. Because, we're like hawks watching, these other states that are cutting back on their admissions. And so we go down and try to bring those students up here. So there's a lot of, they're trying to be very innovative and focused in what they're recruiting for undergraduates.
It's just, it always strikes me that that's the sort of student you're looking for. There's a huge, we're an outdoors mecca. And it just seems like it's a place to capitalize on our strength, which is access to unique outdoor opportunities.
And I think it's been very successful. I mean, they feel like it's been very successful as well.
Yeah, I didn't know UAS was advertising in magazines. That's interesting.
And Fairbanks went through a sort of an internal study last year trying to figure out what they could do to make themselves more attractive. They have to get by the cold. So they came up with a series of ads that tried to make cold look fun. They feel like it was pretty successful. Living in Fairbanks myself, I'm like, I don't think so. but they did focus the whole campaign on, 40 below zero and making it look like it was great fun. So they can't do anything about the weather, so they have to work with it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Davis.
Thank you. One of the issues, while we're on the challenge number two, we have open enrollment in our university system.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And as you say, our community colleges are hooked into the regular colleges now. And I want to know if you have any reports or studies that's been done to see the success or not success of us merging those programs into the big campuses and not have them separate. Has anybody looked at that? And do you have any comparison about what you were doing in retention before we went this route versus what we're doing now? Is that something the region is interested in or working on? Because I have some major concern about us. A lot of the people that come over there, like you said, they don't want a necessary degree. They might settle for a BA eventually, but basically they come over there to take just courses that will increase their skills to move up in the job market.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get that, they go away. And what I hear people saying, well, we're in this big system here now. We are lost. We don't have the help that we once had. You know, people are still saying that.
Yeah.
It must be a concern.
Yeah, I'm through the chair, Senator Davis. I'm probably the wrong person to ask. I was the vice chancellor for the community college division when we merged them with the universities. So I never thought it was a good idea at the time. But I will tell you this, that at this point, to go backwards is probably not realistic. I think Anchorage has tried very hard to kind of segregate a little bit and present different doorways that students can come into so that you have what they call university colleges or a college within a college, so that it's not, we don't really want to call it channeling because that's not very popular anymore, but basically you need a different door for people who are less prepared. Fairbanks has moved in the other direction. They really do have higher standards, entry standards, and so they were in a different situation, so their community campus wasn't right. They weren't sharing real estate. In Anchorage, it was very difficult to try to pull those things apart. Now, I think if you asked around to the community campuses around the state, they would tell you that they like it the way it is. If from a student's perspective, it's probably been good overall, much better. There's no transfer problems. Everything is, you know, we just sort of wiped that with, you know, clean. They get to offer courses up and down the levels. So Kenai is able to offer some baccalaureate level courses as well as community college courses, and they're delivering actually BAs and BSs in Matsu and Kenai and at teacher education. So they really like that ability that they have, which is expanded from what it was before. But it still comes up enough that every new president that I've worked with, and this one is my 10th gamble, they come at some point and say, wow, that's really kind of a dumb idea to put these three groups together. You know, can we undo it? It's really, I can't figure out how you could do it, to be perfectly honest with you. At this point, it would be very difficult to do that. So we're trying to get the best fix that we can, given what we have. Okay, significant challenge number 3, how can the university prepare for a future that plausibly could involve diminished oil tax revenues, increased emphasis upon non-petroleum sources of economic activity, and gradually rising average annual temperatures? I honestly have no idea what that means. You know, how the gradually rising annual average temperature, but Dr. Fisher wouldn't take it out, so it's still there. And we don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but it is sort of the overriding issue that we're facing internally at the university.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. I'm not sure either what he means by the gradually rising average annual temperatures, but I think he brings up a good point in the sense that how do we fund the university once oil goes away? Or, I mean, even now it's decreasing substantially every year. And unfortunately, 90% of our money comes from that source, which then we don't have the money to give to the university. What are you doing to prepare for the day where we don't have the oil money anymore? And I know at one time we set aside a bunch of land for the university. Is that a source of money that you could use? You could sell off some of the land or lease it out? And also, I know at one time our alumni giving was one of the lowest of all the colleges. So maybe you could just tell us briefly what you're doing to...
Yeah.
Before you respond to that, since you do have... President Gamble, who was president of the railroad, and they have a fair amount of their income that comes from property, their real estate department. The real estate is 70%. He probably has at least some ideas of how that operation works. So,
well, unfortunately, through the chair, Senator Myers, that the land that you gave us got taken back, essentially, by the Supreme Court. The 250,000 acres was taken back by the Supreme Court, who said that that it basically constituted an appropriation, and it wasn't. We'd have to go back and rejigger the thing. And so we came back in for 2 years ago and spent 2 years trying to get it right again, and we finally just decided that we would wait, frankly, until there was a new and more favorable Department of Revenue that might work with us a little more effectively. We felt that we weren't really getting the kind of support we needed there. So there's still that sort of commitment out there for the 250,000 acres. But as you know, whenever you start talking about land in Alaska, every acre of land has a constituency, I've learned. And we are making a lot of money right now on the land that we have. The land that we currently have, and we have about, I think it's about 140,000 acres, something like that. It's supporting the Scholars Program. That's what funds the entire UA Scholars Program. And we would love to have more land, and I'd love to talk to you about that over the interim, and maybe next session we can talk about that again. I think it is a realistic option for us. There are lots of controversies that go with that, but I'm willing to do it.
Well, if I can just interject, Mr. Chairman, you said you're looking for a new Department of Revenue to work for. Do we have a new Department?
I'm sorry, Natural Resources.
At the state level, or
yes,
yeah.
Okay. Do we have that now? Okay. Is work in progress here? Or? Okay. Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that, because we spent quite a bit of time on that land, and you're right, it was, some pieces were very controversial, and I thought we had that worked out. Okay.
Yes, so did I, but we ended up having to relitigate the entire thing back in the legislature. We never got out of the House Resources Committee. Spending two sessions there, so it was quite frustrating for me. But on the other things you mentioned, fundraising, yes, we have much renewed energy on fundraising. Our alumni fundraising is very low nationally, and we have a lot of room for improvement in that area and a lot of plans. We just had a big retreat last week with, as a matter of fact, a person that was recommended in one of the recommendations that Fisher had. We brought him up here, and he worked with us for 2 days on looking at how to reorganize and rejigger our private fundraising to be more effective. Private philanthropy in Alaska is also, just in general, the lowest in the nation. So this is a difficult state to overcome, but we're working on those. And part of the challenge, I think, is being met by our own work that we're doing with teaching our own students about what it means to give back and to be philanthropists themselves on a small level. We're starting off working with our students who are recipients of scholarships, that they themselves need to begin to give back as soon as they get employed. We need to build that into their psyche. And that's not something that's been done in Alaska before, but we're working hard on it. I know that we have a couple of programs like the ANSEP program where Dr. Schroeder expects his students to start giving back to the university with the first paycheck they receive. And so I think that's something that that we need to spend a lot of time. Building that culture of philanthropy is something that we are working with the Rasmussen Foundation and 4-Acre and others to really spread that around the state. But the issue of what is the, you know, what's the future like? We assume flat budgets. Now, that could be the best case scenario, but we assume going forward in our own planning that there are not going to be big increases. And so, what does that mean for us? It means a lot of reallocation of internal resources. The president has said, I think he said in the finance committees. And it certainly was in our budget this year. We're not starting any new programs. We are trying to really sort of pull in, take a look at what we're doing, figure out what can we not do anymore or what can we do differently that will save us some money by collaborating, by having collapsing programs into one campus, things like that. But just not really interested in starting anything new. It's going to be exceptional to see new programs. So there's a... Excuse me, can I get some water? We're doing a program review within statewide administration, which is, of course, always one of the prime targets for any kind of how can we save money. And so we're doing a program review of the system administration, and we have another consultant's report, the McTaggart report. Thanks. Which focused in specifically on statewide administration. So we have a lot of groups that are out there sort of working on things like the financial management and the risk management and, you know, all the things that could keep the backroom functions that keep the university moving between campuses and the system level, and how can we make those more cost effective. Okay, the fourth significant challenge was how can the university be organized in order to reduce its cost and increase its performance? You know, again, this is sort of more one of the things that has caused, of course, a lot of consternation among our campuses was the proposal, which Fisher goes into quite a bit in here, on a common core curriculum. Many people in the public are surprised when their kids come to school and they find out that we don't have that. But we don't, and so there's a lot of internal discussion about that. I'm not sure it's a great money saver, but it would certainly be helpful to the students. The elimination of ineffective and low enrollment programs is also something that we normally do that on a sort of a rotating, like every 10 years, there's kind of a sweep through to take a look at the programs, but that needs to be done on a more regular basis now, so that programs that have you know, a dozen majors, that we're not holding on to these programs and the faculty that are associated with them beyond their normal lifespan. The last significant challenge: develop and endorse a model which sharpens the mission and generates support. And that's really the whole place where President Gamble is right now, is to develop a strategic plan which acknowledges the reality of the resource situation that the state is in, that is not a plan that talks about building and growth, because that is not realistic for Alaska, that we're looking at a strategic plan that will talk about how we can, with stable resources, reallocate and collaborate internally to meet the needs that Alaska has for its high employment needs, as well as its research needs in the state. So that's quite a challenge, to try to figure out how to do that with no new general fund money. But that's basically, I think, the message going in is that there isn't going to be new general fund money. So any growth is going to have to come from internal reallocations. And if that's not the case, well then hooray, but we're not going to count on it. Okay, well, that was kind of a quick walkthrough. Do you have any more?
Well, I hate to say this, but yeah, we are going to have to adjourn here at 9. I understand Senator Davis has a bill up and I have a bill up. And
that would just leave me.
And I know Senator Stevens had a lot of interest in this area, too, so we may need to call you back. I certainly had a question as it pertained to how you're structured. It almost led me to believe that he was saying you were a little top-heavy, and I just wanted to talk to you about that. And when I see your reports and the organization charts, and you have presidents, vice presidents, chancellors, vice chancellors, provosts, vice provosts, I don't know what all those folks do, and I'm sure you have a good answer for all of them. And I'm sure the finance group has probably nailed you on that. I would, at some point, too, like to ask you what it takes to become a Division I school, because I think, as Senator French mentioned, to attract kids, sometimes they like the prestige of a Division I school, but again, I don't know what all is involved with that. So, we still have a lot of questions. I don't know that any of them are compelling enough to ask you to come back Monday. In fact, I think this will conclude our Education Committee meetings for this session. We do reserve the right, though, since we're in the 24-hour notice, to call the members back if there's something that a bill comes over from the House or something the Senate President wants us to address. Otherwise, this will conclude our meetings. And Wendy, appreciate you coming for us and giving us your presentation on the Fisher Report. Like I said, we may want to have you come back and talk to us again over the interim or next fall, next spring. So with that, is there anything else? Thank you, Wendy. Is there anything to come before the committee before we adjourn? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you.